Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Horror. Greetings, viewers and listeners. Meat Hook Jim here, the Wrestle Horror Podcast. With me, as always, my co-host, Donnie Hoover. And we are ramping up for the Arnold. By the time you hear this, it'll already be over. But there's a lot of exciting stuff going on this week, and it's going to be busy, busy, busy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're recording this on show week. And, I mean, show weeks for just a normal show is always hectic, let alone a three-day event with five wrestling shows and other stuff happening where we're covering 24 hours of content. So, yeah, it's already started today as we're recording this. I'm already getting messages and phone calls and texts and all kind of stuff. So we're ramping up for it.
Get me in.
Right. Yeah, I even got fans reaching out asking if I can get them in for free and they'll help out. And I'm like, nope, sorry, bud. <It's> like,
Joining us on this episode of the Wrestle Horror Podcast is Alex Matthews. Alex, how are you tonight?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Good. We are doing, we're hectic, as yeah. You know.
Oh, I get it.
A lot going on this week. And as a matter of fact, you are going to be at the Arnold this weekend with us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't be more excited about the opportunity. And then to face somebody like James Avery, right? Somebody who's a veteran of the business for X amount of years. I mean, you guys, I'm sure, have the stats. It's mm-hmm. It's definitely quite humbling, right? To face somebody with that, what would you call that? I mean, the bar, you know.
The tenure, yeah.
Right, the pedigree, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been in the business 20 years plus, so yeah, he's been around a while.
All right, and has his own school, right? Mm-hmm. Pretty much with now, so it's definitely a big opportunity, big match that, you know, I feel like I wouldn't say people might take lightly, but it's just a big opportunity for Alex Matthews, right? You know, going in there and proving himself that, you know, somebody with that kind of experience. Alex Matthews is just as good, if not better, you know, maybe hopefully that night.
There you go.
So Alex, let's go back to the beginning.
Okay.
First of all, I want to assume, and I use that term loosely because I know a lot of wrestlers were wrestling fans as children. I'm going to assume that you were one of those.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Very much so.
And when did you really start? I mean, how old were you when you really started to get into wrestling?
That's the crazy. You know, I always try to think about that question because a lot of people have asked me. And honestly, I know it might be cliche, I guess, but like you hear it, you know, from guys like Seth Rollins and other guys like where it's like John Cena, like as long as I can remember, I still remember trying to stay up. I think it was 9 o'clock back then, you know, you're staying up late trying to get to Monday night, you know, 9 a.m. trying to stay up acting like you're asleep. And my dad knew I wasn't asleep, but, you know, he sitting there watching, you know, Triple H, Rock, Austin, Taker, Kurt Angle, you know, a couple of people I'm sure you've had on here have their different eras. But I would say I definitely caught the end more like in the 98, 99. I would definitely say that's where I started. And like you said, I just couldn't get enough of it. Loved it. I would say I was engulfed in it. Like, you know, I was the typical, let's see, my grandmother had a Hulk Hogan, one of those wrestle buddies that she gave me. And I'll tell you, I wrestled with that thing, tore up many couches, broke many beds, many couches, wrestling that thing for as long as I could remember.
How many times did Hulk Hogan win?
Huh?
How many times did Hulk Hogan win?
I'll tell you, he didn't politic that night. Wait, you can't say that. He didn't. But no, he never won. For whatever reason, what was it? I had like these little totes, you know, that you'll find at Walmart for like $15 or whatever. And I'd always like get the lids and, you know, those would be a table. And then you get the lids. Those are chairs and stuff like that. Because that was probably when the hardcore stuff really started to kick in, didn't it? With the hardcore title with Mankind, maybe towards 2000-ish, 2001.
Yeah. Still Attitude Era there with all that stuff going on.
So Hogan was pretty much a straight up jobber in your company, huh?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. All I did was ever, what was it? I just love Triple H, man. Everybody gives him flack for whatever reason. And I mean, you can argue about it. You agree, you don't agree. That guy to me has one of the best psychology minds in the business. Like just the way he could grasp you, whether he was a good guy, bad guy, whatever it was, he would have you glued to that TV. And then that's when earlier, you know, I was telling you guys like Shawn and Triple H, that feud for me just hooked me the entire time. I didn't even realize it was maybe a 2-3 year feud. You know, I still remember Shawn Michaels coming out when Chris Benoit won Royal Rumble. And it was just like, you know, he's the real number one contender. Shawn Michaels, boom, super kicks him at that contract signing, signed his name. I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. Got me so like I was sitting there screaming at my TV. Yeah, Shawn Michaels. But like I said, Triple H, I remember when he first won the WWF championship, SummerSlam 99. It's been told, you know, he was supposed to win it that night. You know, he didn't, beats Mankind the next day. I still thought that was, you know, the greatest thing for whatever reason. I don't know. Love Triple H every reason.
I'll be honest. I agree with you about Triple H and his psychology and the way he works the crowd and the ring. This coming from a man who is a WCW fan.
Nah. Gotcha.
I'm a little older than you. So, you know, I went back in, you know, WCW, Florida Championship Wrestling, Georgia Championship Wrestling. I was a WCW man all the way until WWF bottom. But I did respect what Triple H did and does. And I appreciated him for it because he was, I mean, when they call him the cerebral assassin, that's no joke.
Right. Agreed. I mean, he literally, and that's the thing, right? He was the guy who worked with the talent. Well, I mean, he's the one who got all the talent over. I mean, honestly, hated man in the business. It was Triple H and Rock, it was Triple H and Rock. Man, they even feuded. What was their ladder match? Was that 98 or 97? When they were for the Intercontinental Championship, when he like took over DX, like Nation versus Triple H, Nation. What was that? 98.
Think so. Yeah.
Yeah. When they had that that ladder match for the Intercontinental Championship, and Triple H got cheered, he got powdered in the face. I think Triple H got the powder because I remember him celebrating with the Intercontinental title. He had powder in his face because Mark Henry threw it in. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Total shift change, but yeah, go ahead.
Donnie?
Oh yeah. So where did you start training at? What made you go to training and decide you wanted to do it?
I guess I always wanted to do it, right? Like, I mean, probably when I was 15, 16, always talked about it, you know. That's when they, at least knowingly, you know, there was always those video games where you could create a wrestler, you create your own wrestler, and like you had your buddies that watch wrestling, you were a tag team or like you're a group or whatever. And I don't know, I just always like just had like in the back of my mind, like I'm gonna be a wrestler. It's like that's what I want to do when I grow up, you know. And I'm trying to think. So I graduated high school, worked, did all that, and I went to college because I wrestled for as long as I can remember. I think seventh grade is when I broke in. I broke into wrestling. I wrestled. And once again, it was just like, I get like, it's not the same, you know, but amateur wrestled all the way out through high school and then like went to college and even was going to do it. And I got to college like my first semester and it was just like, this is boring. This is what I wanted to do. And like, cause you know, they get you the question, especially your senior year in high school. What do you want to do? What do you want to do when you grow up? What do you want to be? And it's just like, you know, it's like things sound cool. Like, oh, it'd be cool to be a doctor. It'd be cool to be a dentist. But like in the back of my mind, it was just like, you want to wrestle. Like, it's just always been there. And it's always hard to explain to people. I feel like it just is. Like if you have that connection, it just is. Mm-hmm. But, to get to your actual question of, you know, so then, you know, I just was like, I want to be a wrestler. And so I, you know, quit, you know, took the rest of my college fund that I had and found a wrestling school that was local, and just began training. Trained with MCW, with late Kevin Shasta, who I know you know. Yeah, and that, and his head trainer at the time was Ethan Wright, who was trained by Harley Race. He just recently, at that time, let's see, that was about 2011. He just recently came back to Ohio from Missouri, training out there, doing stuff out there with his, you know, Harley Race's group. And, you know, he was his head trainer at Kevin's and was showing, you know, I don't know. And that was the other thing, just me and Ethan had a, had a connection, right? Like when we were in the ring, like, you know how you can just tell, like, and I get it. I'm green. I know nothing. I can barely lock up, but it was just like, I don't know. It just like even more connected me to the business with just the things he would show me, or, you know, like you said, like those old school mentalities where it's just like, you know, you get in a wrist lock, the wrist lock mattered, here's why, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you, hopefully, that was your first tag team partner, wasn't it? Was Ethan. I say you guys had a pretty successful tag team there for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Generation. Exactly. When we're coming up on Arnold, Generation Iron. Yep. Uh-huh. That was probably 2015. So I guess I would have been 2 years in at that point. Yeah. About 2015 to 2016, I would say. No, kind of reunited in 2017 a little bit for Ohio Championship Wrestling. But yeah, like you said, for now, I mean, I wrestled Big Guns Jeff Cannon under the Generation Iron. We wrestled, what was it? Robbie Starr, who's your now champion now. And
Jimmy Shane. Yeah.
I remember we came down there, that one building. I have no idea what the building's called, but I do remember that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The soccer facility.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Kickmaster. Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I won't try to take over the interview. Go ahead.
No, you're fine.
You are the interview.
That's just it, you know. We're here to talk about Alex Matthews.
Oh man.
See, we got you on the, we got you in the main event now. You're main eventing this shit.
Dogs. Yeah. That's hard to believe sometimes. And I get that I've taken my time off for, you know, various reasons and this and that, but I can't believe. And then, you know, COVID didn't help, but, you know, just to the idea that I've been wrestling for 9 years total, you know, it's just, it's hard to imagine that I've been in the wrestling, and that's not even training. I trained for like almost 2 years. So it's like, man, can't believe I've wrestled that long already.
You know, I've got to say that I can believe you've been wrestling for 9 years by watching you work. However, I can't believe you've been doing it for 9 years by looking at you.
I think that's a good thing. Depends what you mean by that. Hopefully that's good.
You look a little younger than I expected.
Thank you. It's weird, at my real job, a lot of people, because I'm a supervisor and stuff, and they actually tell me all the time, they're like, what are you, like 33, 34? And I'm like, no, because you know I've always had that, and amongst my friends too growing up, I've always had like that more dad mentality, where, or like the older brother, where, you know, you catch your friends doing something stupid, you're like, what are you doing, what are we doing this for, what are you doing? And like, you know, like you said, a level head, or just, you know, had that clear mindset. And, but back to your original comment, I really appreciate what you said. Cause, I mean, when I wrestle, it's weird. Cause when I first met my wife, and, you know, she's like, you're a wrestler, you know, when we were dating and stuff, and I was just like, yeah. And, you know, and, I always tried to tell her, it was just like, no, even if it was for 1 second, I wanted somebody in the crowd to really believe what I was doing, you know, believe in the character of Alex Matthews, no matter what that was or what part that was. It was just believe in Alex Matthews. And because that's what we do, right? I mean, we sell emotions, that, you know, it's like when we tell a story, we sell emotion, and that's what got us all into it. Somebody made us feel one day some type of emotion that wanted you to watch wrestling. Mm-hmm. I mean, got in it, Donnie, that's how you got in, Jim, no matter what era we're in, right? I mean, for what I said, Triple H, like, Donnie, Jim, what are your guys' favorite wrestlers, and why, like, you know,
I was a four horseman guy myself. I've always been a heel guy, and I lean more toward the bigger guys, like the Bam Bam Bigelows, the Bruiser Brodies, those kind of guys. Mankind was a favorite of mine, or Cactus Jack is when I started following him. But the Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer, I don't even know how many people out there remembers Mad Dog, but Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer was big for me. So yeah, those kind of guys is who I kind of looked up to, the more physical, violent ones.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Me, hands down, Sting.
For sure. What era Sting? That's an even better question.
Both eras. Both.
Okay.
Eras. The Surfer Sting was what really drew me in. See, to go back even before Sting, just to date myself a little bit, I would be 57 in a few days.
Well, since you complimented me, I can't believe it, Jim.
Well, I appreciate that. But I would not watch pro wrestling until the age of about 12, because I thought it was boxing. And to me, boxing's boring.
Yeah.
And my cousins, who were big into it, roped me into watching it one afternoon when we were all together. I was like, oh, this is cool. And then Sting came on the scene. Now, that was 77. And Sting came on my scene in about 85. It's like, I can get behind this character. And he was great, but when he became Crow Sting, right, it was even more awesome.
Right.
Some people say you shouldn't meet your heroes, but I got to meet Sting a few years ago. And he was just as cool as he was when I first started watching him.
Right.
I was a little bit, when I met him at the convention, I was a little bit tongue-tied.
Right.
I was marking bad. I mean, bad.
So bad.
My wife looked at him and said, he really likes you. He just can't say it. And as we're walking away, he goes, I started in 85. I said, I remember.
Wow.
And that has always stuck with me, that he even spoke to me beyond that. And now he's 62 and still wrestling.
Yeah, right.
Of course, I got a little mad at Seth Rollins with the whole buckle bomb thing at Night of Champions.
Yeah, well, we don't know, right? I mean, of course, I don't indulge in that type of stuff. I don't read all the internet and things. I'm naive, I would say, but I don't know whose decision that was. Maybe I feel like if I was him, and just because I'm me, I even at 62, I'd be like, oh yeah, brother, go ahead, give me that buckle bomb. We go in here. And I'd take it and I'd be like, time out.
Well, Sting said he did not hold anything against Seth. He said, it happened.
Right.
And I appreciate him for that, but that was tough because I thought Sting was done. And then, granted his wrestling now is very limited, but he's still a presence.
Mm. Right.
And I think he's molding Darby Allin very well.
Yeah, I agree. And then, that's the thing, right? Like, let me quote, a lot of people might get flack for this. Let's quote Jim Cornette, right? Emphasize the strengths, hide the weaknesses, right? I mean, easy developmental stuff. I mean, Sting is Sting, right? He alone name, and just like you said, his presence, his aura while he's there, like you said, it might be limited wrestling wise, but he doesn't need to do all that. He's Sting. He's already been there, did that 100 times over,
And a little bit of trivia. Did you know that Sting, the singer, pays him $1 a year to use that name?
You're lying. No way.
I kid you not.
Wow. That's awesome. That'd be so sweet to have that type of.
Gordon Sumner pays Steve Borden $1 a year to use the name Sting.
Wow. That's incredible. What a name. Could you guys imagine what it's like to be on that type of level? Like that type of tier wrestler? Like Rick, I don't know. It's just hard to find some things, right? That top tier performer, that top tier level wrestler, like Taker, Sting, I guess Shawn, you know, greatest Mr. WrestleMania, greatest wrestler of all time, like to live up to that type of hype or to have that type. Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, depending who you ask, biggest star in the business, like how to live up to such a hype. It's almost unfathomable. I can't speak, whatever. You guys get the point. It's hard to imagine.
Yeah, but what's to stop you from being at that point?
Myself. I already know it's myself. I've always said that, right? I mean, and it's funny that you asked that. And it's funny that I see the picture behind you. And the reason for that is, like, I remember, and Donnie will tell you, I mean, you said your more recent matches. I used to be Unbreakable Alex Matthews. And I was Unbreakable Alex Matthews for years. And I was even worried Michael Elgin was going to give me a cease and desist letter for a long time. But I just, and it was just, you know, I remember me and Ethan wrestled at West Virginia and I had Al Snow watch. And, you know, we wrestled, we did our match, probably did more than what we should have and all that, just because we're trying to just make, you know, do some new company, all that. And Al Snow watched and he came back. He said, well, you two can wrestle. You guys are two good wrestlers. He's like, well, but who are you and who are you? And, you know, and there was nothing wrong with that. There was absolutely nothing wrong. And I would say that I still didn't understand it more at the time, but it was just, he was trying. And then he broke down, you know, who is Stone Cold? And, you know, he went in there and he delivered, like, who, you know, the character that Stone Cold is. And he's like, you can market that. You can sell that. And he's like, and who are you? He's like, you're just, who is Alex Matthews? And he's just like, and what am I going to sell with that? And that's what, like, made me really start to engage in my brain. Like, there's a difference between being a good wrestler and also being a star, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know you guys' feelings on that, but it just, like you said, like I feel like that's where I'm at. I can wrestle and I know what I can do and what I can't do. I'm not going to go out there and I'm going to do a 450. I'm not going to go out there and do a backflip, but I am going to go out there and I'm going to make you somehow, some way believe for 1 minute that I'm either going to beat this person or I'm going to, you know, I need your help to get up, you know? And that's why I was going with that. Sorry, I keep mm-hmm. rambling. Unbreakable Alex Matthews to a character that I believe is true, you know, at least more true to who I am, of All-American man Alex Matthews. And then that's when it started to click for me, like, this is who you are, this is what you present, you know. And when you're talking to people, like, you know what you're talking about because it's you. And, you know, everybody said the greatest gimmicks are a part of you just turned up by 10, you know. Mm-hmm. So it just, to get back to the original question of, you know, what says that you can't, it's just, I think it's just now starting to click, like who I am as a wrestler, well, what being confident in myself and knowing what either character or what, like you, like we were just talking about, aura do I want to portray and what do I want, what does that look like to be a star? And I guess I'm still kind of connecting that with the All-American man style gimmick.
See, here it is. It all comes down to one simple word, charisma. Okay. Now, right. I'm going to give you a prime example of charisma. Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
He's a mediocre wrestler at best.
Right, right.
But he had the charisma that made him a star.
Right.
So what's to stop you from having that same charisma?
It's a good question. I guess I don't really have the answer for that. Well, like you said, though, like that's where like guys like James Avery, Russ guys like James Avery is like, you're taking these pieces and these building blocks and you're trying to grasp onto them. Like, okay, I'm going to do this. And okay, we're going to do this. And then, you know, you put it in place with guys that are veterans that have been around. And then you start to make connections. Like I still remember that picture. Man, that's funny. Cause I love that picture. And the only reason is I remember on that night, I had every person in that building booing me out of that building. They could not wait for me to leave. And it was just like, you're onto something. Like, you know, whether it be the gimmick itself or, you know, the name itself or just my overall wrestling ability, like you said, the charisma, you know, just the little stuff. Like you got some, like, you know, people will sit there and they'll put somebody in a chokehold and, you know, they're just holding them in a chokehold. And it's just like these, you know, and then it's like, you expect people to react or things like that. Just, and then, you know, click the, go into the old fashioned Chris Jericho, pick one person around the ring, right? You pick that one person, you pick on them. Then you pick on one person over there and keep going around the ring. And then guess what? You got one person. Now somebody's mad because somebody else is mad. And then you got the whole arena. And then all of a sudden you got heat, right? You got Roddy Piper heat. Hope I never get stabbed. I got the Roddy Piper. I want it, but I know never want to get stabbed.
You want somebody to attempt it, just not be successful.
That's right. Always think about it, like, I want every person in this building to hate me. I want them to spit on me. I want them to hate my guts. And then I think about it, like, man, they're going to try and fight me in the parking lot. I don't want to fight nobody.
I've had that happen before.
Yeah. Whether you're a face or you're a heel, you want that passionate reaction from the crowd.
That's right. That's right. And that's the thing, right? It's not just like have an awesome match. And it is, right? We always, you know, for ourselves want to have good wrestling matches, but it's like, that's the main reason why, like, I would even say, like, cause you know, I took a break in 2017 and you know, thinking about like, and then watching in like 2019, like all these other different wrestlers, all these different guys, and like, just thinking of the story that I could have with them and, you know, thinking about, you know, the direction that you could go. And that's the thing, right? It's like, you can still have a good match or a solid match, but it's like, it doesn't need to be a barn burner. It doesn't need to be, you know, bangers, as everybody calls them now. Everybody has bangers. And it's just like, not every match needs to be a banger. It needs to be solid to carry over to the next match that you hope is solid, that will carry to the next match, that will carry to hopefully 4 or 5 months from now, that will be the banger. And that will be the big payoff and the one that everyone is invested in and wants to buy tickets with. Because I mean, that if they're not buying tickets to see you, then what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's a good point for like on the wrestling side of things. You know, each match doesn't have to be a banger, as they call it, but you know, each match should build on each other. You know, on one hand, you know, if you're having a feud with somebody or you're working a program with somebody, each match should build upon to build up for the next match. And even a full wrestling card, you know, each match from the opening match to the main event, each one of those matches should also build to push the other match forward. You know, that's after it. So yeah, that's a good point to make for, you know, the wrestlers out there, that everyone doesn't have to be a 5-star match. You know, you just need one good enough just to build upon the next one.
Right. And yep. on top of that, you don't need a spot show.
Nope.
I mean, if you do a spot show, you pretty much ruined the story because it's all about the spots. I mean, oh, what big move is going to happen next? Don't give it all away in one shot.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, it's like, and that's what, like you said, I've learned that the hard way, right? Like me and Ethan, right? Like there were guys, and I'm not knocking on them at all, right? I'm not trying to. It's just the idea, like you said, people will go out there and do these spots, and they'll you know, expect a reaction, and they don't get it. And it's just like, well, look what town you're in. They want interaction. They want investment. They want you to play to them. You can do that stuff. Of course, you know, you limit them, you know, figuring out what type of crowd they are, what have you. But like you said, you make them invest in the match. And then, yes, when you hit that big move, that's when they'll care. You know, if you're just hitting it, it's just, they'll forget about you. You know, it's just like, oh, you know, and that was always the thing too, that I always like thought to myself is, I want to be remembered after this show. You know, if Jim comes to a show, sees me for the first time, okay, that's wrestler one. Okay, this is wrestler two. This is guy in trunks three. You know, oh, he did that one cool 450 move. But what do you remember? I remember All American Man Alex Matthews, just the way that, you know, I wanted him to win so bad. That one bad guy, Donnie, came in and was giving him the, you know, giving him the business, giving him the boots. And he reached out to me. He wanted me to help, you know, just small stuff. I could go up. Mm-hmm. I could talk about something. Hours, but just little stuff like that is just Ricky Morton teaching him how to sell, you know, reach out to him, using the ropes. I remember I watched in that one documentary what Taker was saying to all the bigger guys, you know, using the ropes to help. You watch Taker's matches. He always did that, using the ropes to help get himself up. You know, when he was getting hit or things like that, when he was coming up, you know, dazed, just little stuff. And that's the thing. You can still hit the big stuff, or like you said, a spot show, and you just got to do it at the right time. And I'm not saying I'm perfect at that. I've did many people on here that'll watch this will probably say, you've had those matches, and you're dang right I did, where I went out there and thought you had to do the world. But like I said, like, I'm starting to get in this thing now where it's like, I feel like every match I'm coming away with, I'm like, man, I'm figuring something out.
Yep. It's a growing process. It ain't going to happen overnight.
Right. Right.
If it was easy, everybody would do it.
Yeah. And everybody would.
And see, that's the thing I'm jealous about, because, you know, in this day and age, it's easy to find a wrestling school.
I would agree.
When I wanted to be a wrestler, not so easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was one of my big regrets is, you know, when I was 15, that was my goal in life, as I wanted to be a pro wrestler. You know, I had my dad bought me wrestling gear for Christmas one year.
Yeah.
Amateur wrestling gear, mind you. I didn't specify, so that's what he bought me. So I had this singlet that looked just stupid. But I didn't know how to find, I didn't have internet at the time. I didn't know how to find a wrestling school. I was in Florida.
Oh, man.
You know, so it's like, okay, well, this dream's not going to happen. And by the time I get into wrestling, I'm too freaking old to do it. You know, like I said, I'm 57. I've been ring announcer for Donnie for 3 years. I just wish I could take a bump so I could get a little more involved, you know, but
you know, we can get you to bump. That ain't a problem. It'll just, you'd be getting you back up will probably be the problem.
yes. That's it. I can bump just getting my big ass back up. And that's a scary thing, because I'm bigger than most of the talent.
Hey, I'm pathetic. as the guys at the Arnold will probably tell, I try to be aesthetic.
There you go.
For certain.
I'm 6'4".
Yeah. 6'4". I mean, that's good. You said you're 6'4"? Is that what you said?
I'm 6'4".
Dang, man. If only I could be 6'4".
And and I'm about 330 pounds right now.
Man.
Which is a bit bigger than I like to be. I'm comfortable around 250. So that just gives you an idea.
You're a mom. This was...
You know, I would absolutely, you know, I would love to be able to get in the ring and just do limited stuff, but I know it's not going to happen. So I live vicariously through my ring announcing.
Right. And I get that, though. I mean, I always think, because, you know, like, if for whatever reason I ever stopped wrestling or where that will ever, you know, because wrestling's a ride. It's a roller coaster. You never know where you're going to go. And it just, if anything happened, it was just like, you know, training. You know, training would be fun. That would be a nice niche that I think would be fun for me. Or like you said, being a manager, being like that, just taking, you know, the personality, like you said, charisma, and just, you know, maybe not taking the bumps anymore or wrestling, but still helping, you know, get involvement and getting, you know, whether it be he or crowd cheering, you know, getting them invested in the match, things like that. Like that, it's still, like you said, you're still playing a part, and it's an important role. Everybody has an important role. You know, we're trying to be larger than life stars, you know, and try to portray ourselves as stars. And, you know, if we have us, and no knocks on this person either, I never try to bash anybody, but somebody I came out and I had, it was the first time I wore my new shirt, you know, for All American Man, had this new shirt, kind of new boots, you know, I felt good about myself. I came out and they called me the All American something, and Alex Matthews. And I just like looked at him and I was like, all right, I'm that guy. Not it, but you know, it's just like, in for people who haven't seen me for a while for that company, and they don't know who I am. And now they're, I'm all, yeah, like, you know, it's just luckily I have Alex Matthews on the back of my trunk. So
honestly, I would love to be a manager.
Yeah,
absolutely would love to be a manager, but I got to learn how to take a couple of bumps, because managers get attacked.
You're right.
But I think we might be able to figure it out. If I lose a little more weight, Donnie can teach me how to take a couple of bumps. I would absolutely love to get out there and be a heel manager. You know, I just,
oh, sure.
I mean, heels are so much fun.
For sure. Absolutely. I mean, that's why I said, I feel like I'm doing the best work I've ever done being a heel, just because, like you said, it's just fun. It's, I wouldn't say it's easy, but it's just fun. It's definitely a different animal.
Right.
But go.
Well, you can talk to the crowd differently, and you can, it's easy to draw that heat if you do it right. But you know, we've got two heel managers now. We've got Ripper Blackheart and David Barnabas Spector.
Right.
So, I mean, I think it's a little crowded there for, oh, and Mark, don't forget the golden idol, Mark Coval. I mean, maybe I'd have to be a face manager, which wouldn't be quite as fun, but still cool.
Right. It would be. Until you betray somebody.
Right.
In the back.
I want to throw a question out there, because we always like to try to pull out a golden nugget from everybody that we talk to, and so with your, you know, the experience you've had and the experiences you've had are different from experiences other wrestlers have had, what would be like one key piece of advice that you could offer other people that's in training or aspiring or just even listening?
Oh boy, that's a lot of pressure.
Did 2020 take its toll on your fitness? Well, body slam the pandemic and get back in shape with WrestleFit. This innovative program combines all the fitness regimens you'll need to reach your goals. The WrestleFit workout will bring strength training, cardio, and the world of professional wrestling together in a fun, new, and exciting way. Have yourself a blast working out with dumbbells, kettlebells, slam balls, ropes, tires, and an 18-foot full-size wrestling ring. The WrestleFit workout isn't just for pro wrestlers. The WrestleFit workout is for everybody. At the Now Training Center, you can pursue your fitness goals and learn how to train like a professional wrestler without all the bumps, bruises, and slams with the WrestleFit workout. Go to www.newohiowrestling.com/training for more information, or stop by the Now Training Center at 625 Eastgate Parkway, Blacklick, Ohio, 43004, unit 6137.
Like, it depends where they're at, but I would argue that if somebody is just now into wrestling, I even kind of do it, loop it with a story. I went to Cody Hawk's when I first moved to Columbus. I went down to Cody Hawk's Pro Wrestling Academy because I wanted to, you know, bump some rust off and things like that. And he was showing them how to, tie up, grab the arm, you know, ring the arm, show them a couple reversals with that and stuff like that. And, you know, you know how people are when they first get in the wrestling business, they're not too keen on that, right? They want to body slam somebody, tombstone somebody. I would say the big thing is never forget the fundamentals. The fundamentals matter. And like you said, the little things matter. You do a back elbow, you better do the best back elbow you've ever did. You're going to do a forearm, you better do the best forearm you've ever got. And that's the thing, right? Like you said, you don't got to throw 10 of them. If you throw one good one, sell it. I mean, that's all that matters. And that, I guess, the little nugget, and of course you'll hear that from everybody, but the little stuff really matters and the fundamentals matter. You watch one of Alex Matthews matches, you're not going to see the biggest, you know, like I said, the biggest shooting star, the Red Arrow, like Pac or Pac, whatever he says his name is. You're not going to see that. But you're going to see me hit a power slam, and it's going to be a nice, tight power slam. You're going to see a spinning clothesline. It's going to be a nice, tight, little snug clothesline, you know. And for that moment, I hope that I made somebody in that crowd, or hopefully, obviously, all the crowd, believe for 1 minute that I'm about to win this match, you know. Or, you know, that's the end of the match type of deal.
Good question. Good advice.
Glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought up Cody, because I was going to ask you about how you liked working with Cody Hawk.
That man is I'll give him all the credit. I will give him all the credit. I messaged him myself, and I wanted to reinvent myself. Like I said, I was doing Unbreakable Alex Matthews, and I came back into wrestling, you know, after COVID, and was trying, And I just felt like it, I wouldn't say it was stale, but I wanted to project something different. And that's why I said those things were turning where it's like, I know I can wrestle. And I don't mean that in an egotistical way. I'm solid enough that if you put me as the first match on the card, I know I can wrestle. Sure. But that's not right. Like you said, charisma, that's not enough. You need, if you want to be, you know, whether it be semi-main event, you know, main event level guy, a guy that, you know, people want to invest in. And I know I feel confident enough now in my wrestling ability that it's like, I know people will hopefully buy tickets, you know, just to watch me wrestle or come and want to see this, if the story's good. But it's just like, what's something people can, you know, I've just always been generic, I would say, you know, what's something everybody can identify, but it's like, who are you? Like, what do you want to present? What is the character you want to present? What's the style you want to present? And, you know, and I sat down and talked with, like you said, Ripper Blackheart. I sat down with Cody and we just talked about, like, you know, why did you want to join wrestling? You know, what do you do? And, you know, what makes you different? You know, and we just sat and he just started, you know, just talking about it and talking about this. Like, he's like, you know, you can do this and you can do that. And he's like, you work a hardworking job, working overtime. And he's like, you know, factory style work. And, you know, he's talking about, he was like, you do jabs in your matches. And he's like, you know, he's like, play him up a little bit. And then later in the matches, you start, you know, hitting the jabs. And he's like, they're running. And he's like, just using an example. He's like, or maybe you drop like the Dolph Ziggler elbows, you know, and you're dropping elbows. He's dropping the press on him, like putting it over in commentary. Like just, and he's like, and it's not over the top, right? It's not like William Regal style. It's not trying to be like that, but it's just, and you add layers to it. But like you said, just picking his brain and the way he thinks and implements it into matches. It was just something I never experienced before. At least I felt like I never experienced before at that time. And you know, he used to own HWA, you know, one of the developmentals with Les Thatcher. You know, it's just, that was what he did. He was a trainer and that's just what he did. So that's where his mind goes. It was just so amazing to me how just he was able to just bam, bam, bam. And he just put it together for me. He took my own repertoire, just put it together for me. And I was just so amazed at like the ability that he had to do that, you know? And so I always try every chance I get to be like Cody Hawk, man, he's that guy. And just because, and talking to him, you know, he's just at that level that I feel, that next level where it's like a veteran style. You know, and I even went on Facebook and social media because I personally hate social media. So I suck at it. But just try to put these posts out there and try to, you know, get some type of momentum. And, you know, it was just like, I want these vet guys. I want these guys who've been on the road. I want these guys who have 20 years plus experience. You know, when James Avery put out that open challenge, I wanted that experience because I want somebody to help me. I'm never going to get better wrestling guys myself. I'm never going to. And that's kind of where I fell into. Oh, well, you're a solid hand. So let's give this guy who's been wrestling for 2 years, 3 years, you know, some good matches and stuff, but that's not going to help me. I need to wrestle people better than me. I need to wrestle people who have better minds than me, like Cody Hawk, Matthew Taylor. Like I said, James Avery, you know, guys who've been around who are going to sit there and be like, nah, man, this feel like, I'll never forget. We were working to this finish. Me and Wilbur Whitlaw, we were working to this finish and he hits the finish. He goes, they're not going to get any higher. This is it. 1, 2, 3. And at first I was mad. I was like, we had all this, you know, we had this cool stuff and it would have brought him up here. But he was right. The crowd was hot right there. And we were never going to get him back to that. And it was just like learning those little things. And like Cody, you know, showing me that too. When, like you said, coming down to get back to the original question, locking up with him and I walking, talking, calling stuff. And, you know, how to still be a heel with doing little smuggish things like stepping on people's toes, giving them a back elbow, bam. And then still hitting that nice crisp snapmare, just little things right before that. Like I said, just next level stuff to answer your question. He was just showing me that next level stuff on, like you said, you know, what makes you a top star? Those types of things are what make you top stars.
And that is the end of part one of our interview with the All-American Man, Alex Matthews. Tune in next week to hear part two and even more interesting stories and how to check him on social media. We'll catch you then.
Thanks for listening.
Make sure you follow us on all of our social media outlets, facebook.com/WrestleHorror, Instagram at WrestleHorror, Twitter at WrestleHorror, on YouTube at the WrestleHorror channel. And you can also find us on our website, www.WrestleHorror.com.